Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual for our Saturday afternoon show. And this is a busy day in the world of sport. The big event is the running of the Preakness, and they'll go off at about 4:25 Chicago time. The Cubs are on the road, and the White Sox are at home. And a former great football player is our guest today, an old friend, Bobby Douglas. Bobby today, if you're wondering what he's doing, he's in the real estate business, and he's also in the restaurant business with a great organization called Let Us Entertain You. So we'll talk about football and the highlights of his own great career, and Bobby will be our guest in just about 1 minute. Well, we're delighted to have Bobby Douglas as our guest today at Northwest Federal. Bobby, as you know, is a former outstanding football player in the National Professional Football League. Now he's in the real estate business and also in the restaurant business. I want to remind you that the Hemophilia Foundation of Illinois is having their big event, their 8th annual All-Sports Spectacular, this week coming up. It'll be held at the Chicago Marriott O'Hare, and it's next Wednesday, May the 21st, with cocktails at 6 o'clock and dinner at 7 o'clock. You'll have a chance to see many of the outstanding athletes and people there, and including our guest today. Bobby, you'll be there.
Yes, I will. Of course, it's this year the honoree is Dick Butkus, former great middle linebacker with the Bears in the Hall of Fame now. Dick is, of course, not living in the Illinois area at this time. He lives in Florida, but spends a lot of time in Chicago, and I think it's a great honor for the Hemophilia Foundation to bring Dick back and honor him. And it should be an exciting evening, and I would hope that anybody listening or anybody here today might enjoy seeing Dick. He doesn't make that many appearances in the area. Of course, it'll be very exciting for me and a lot of the other Bears who played with him to honor him that night.
What was the best Bear team that you played with?
I would say probably the best team we had in my years was Dick's when Dick was still healthy. Gale Sayers was not as healthy at that time. 71, 72, and 73, we had, I think, a very competitive football team. We had a couple, two of those years we were in the lead through about half the season. We were still leading the division and ended up, of course, having real problems in with injuries, part of those being in Dick's situation and also Gale Sayers, and had the bad half of the last season most of the time and lost, you know, most of our games in the last half of the season, but had some good years in 71, 72, and 73.
How did Gale Sayers compare with some of the other great backs you saw while you were in the pro game?
Well, I've said that many times. I was one of the few people. I think I'm the only quarterback that probably ever, good trivia question, that ever handed off to Walter Payton, Gale Sayers, and O.J. Simpson, the three greatest running backs of all time. I played with O.J. in some All-Star games. Played with, of course, Walter here with Chicago, and played with Gale in several years here in Chicago. I played with Walter Payton only 1 year, my last year, but I would have to say they're all three different types of running backs. I would say Simpson is a more closely related to Gale Sayers in his style. Walter Payton style varies from both of those because I think he's a much stronger running back than either of those. Gale is obviously the greatest open field running back that ever played the game. OJ is a greatest combination of speed and open field running. Plus he has had tremendous strength. Walter Payton is a guy who tends to be more of a strength type runner, but also has, of course, great moves in the open field when he gets, but has a great ability to be able to give himself the room to get in the open field strictly because of his strength. He breaks a lot of tackles. Gale, more than breaking tackles, just made people miss him. He was such a tremendous open field runner. And of course, Simpson is by far the greatest speed running back of all time. Of course, as you know, he was a 9.3 sprinter, and at one time was on the 440-yard relay team that held the world record for a while. So he was a tremendous track man and probably the fastest running back that ever played the game. Gale was about a 9.700 man. Payton's probably about the same. So three different styles, but probably the three greatest running backs I've ever seen.
Well, that's something. It'd be pretty hard to pick three better backs than that. They were really all speedballs.
If I could have played with all three of them at one time, I could have even played. We could have even won in Chicago here, but they were great backs.
Well, they certainly were. By the way, how many coaches did you play for?
Well, I actually played just in Chicago here. I played for three coaches is all. I played with, of course, Jim Dooley, Abe Gibron, and then Jack Pardee in my last year here. Then I was lucky enough to play with, I think, one of the tremendous coaches in football history, Hank Stram, down in New Orleans. And then I went up to Green Bay my last year and played for Bart Starr. All a very different type of coaches and very interesting.
I was wondering about Bart Starr. He's been a good friend of mine for a long, long time. And, of course, I don't know football like you do, but what about his business to get across the art of playing football as a coach?
Well, I think he's an exceptional coach. He relates very well with the players. I think he's been able to go from the playing field to the coaching profession very well. I think he's one of the few players who's actually, I think, a successful coach. He hasn't won in Green Bay. He's had a lot of problems there. He came into a program that was really really down at the time. They didn't have very many draft choices. I think he's done a good job up there. I think he's made some mistakes by maybe going with too many young people in the last couple years, which I think has kept him from winning big and maybe has kept him from being in the top the last couple years. Of course, 2 years ago, the last year I was there, we were lucky enough to win to tie for the division. But other than that, he's had some tough years up there. He's a tremendous coach and has a lot of knowledge of the game as any quarterback that played as long as he did and did the things he did would have. But I think he's an innovative type coach, which is something that I think most people wouldn't think he would be, although he's always stayed very much with the Vince Lombardi theory. I think he's also been innovative, which I think is a very important part of professional football today.
When you mention, and you just mentioned, the Vince Lombardi theory of playing football, what exactly are you referring to?
Well, I think basically the old traditional discipline type player, continued hard work and discipline, and I think that's something that is even lacking today. I think just the whole ethic is somewhat different than it was even 10, 11 years ago when I started playing in professional football. Of course, it's changed a great deal in the last 15 years in college. That's due to a lot of things, but I think it's something that every great coach has a tendency to be able to get across to his players, and that's that the number one thing you're trying to do when you're in professional football is be a winner. Taking out the money and whether or not you're making a lot of money or not. Now, that's not to say that a player should forget that, but the number one thing in his mind at all times is working as hard as he can to achieve one thing, and that's winning. Now, of course, Vince Lombardi always said you put your, you know, there were three things, your family first, your religion second, and winning third. But basically what he was saying, the first two we all accept, but winning is the name of the game. And it's usually a charisma, coaching technique, whatever it is that has to get that across to players, and very few coaches, and only the great coaches, can get that across. But I still say that the one thing that they stress is winning number one and disciplined football players.
What are a few of your observations on some of the other coaches? What about Landry?
Well, I think Landry's, in his own way, is a great, very disciplined type coach. He's somebody who believes in long-range discipline. He believes in taking a player and he might sit on the bench 3-4 years. He's going to learn a system, a complicated system, and therefore they're going to out-maneuver, so to speak, and out-think and out-play people and do things that over the long range that are going to give them a winning tradition. He doesn't believe that you have to walk in the first year and a player that they drafted has to be playing right now. He believes that it's going to take 2 or 3 years for a player to become a good professional football player. And in fact, Landry's success, I think a lot of coaches and a lot of general managers are now trying to base their theory of professional football on Landry's. He doesn't believe any one player is too big for the team. He's going to every player on his team is an equal. which I think some coaches get away from in their coaching. They don't realize that, not to say, let's say you have a Walter Payton, you have a Gale Sayers, you have an O.J. Simpson, and they should be over here and the rest of the team over there. I think the thing Landry's done to make himself successful is he's never done that. There's no player that ever played in Dallas that was bigger than the team itself, and I think it's a very hard thing for a coach to be able to do that. He's done it extremely well with a lot of great talented football players. Of course, from an organizational standpoint, there's no doubt that Dallas is a leader in talent and the talent search, and being able to keep their players around. And they're a very innovative organization. They've had a lot of money behind them, which always helps. But Landry's is truly one of the great coaches of all time.
I agree with you. He's really a remarkable man. By the way, when you came on the scene, the Paul Brown time was over, wasn't it?
Well, Paul Brown, yes, he was, although I know a lot about Paul Brown because Abe Gibron, of course, played under Paul Brown for 7-8 years, and we were coached with the Paul Brown theory here with Abe Gibron. There's no doubt he was the discipline type type coach also, a very innovative coach in his own way in those days. Paul Brown was ahead of his time from an offensive standpoint. Of course, I think Paul Brown was a tremendous judge of players, and I think that was the reason they had a great deal of talent there, as Vince Lombardi was a great judge of talent, which is really the name of the game when you get down to it. You also, besides being a coach that can handle people and discipline people and understand the whole system of football, football basically is a game that you win with talent. And if you can't get talent and don't know talent, you know, you're not going to have it. And you win very simply by having more good, talented football players than the other team. The rest of it, you better have the discipline. You better have technical coaches and people that can get the system across that you want to run. But you better get some talent in order to win.
Well, Bobby, I always had a feeling that Abe Gibron was the type of guy that you couldn't help but like.
Well, that's true. Of course, Abe had his charisma. He had the, so to speak, charisma that I think the average football player could adapt to, so to speak, could feel at home with, because Abe himself was you know, a robust individual who, you know, kind of, you know, he's a big, strong guy who looked at football as a physical sport, which most athletes, because of the fact that they grow up in that type of an environment as an athlete, that's the way they look at the game. And that was Abe's theory, and that was his way of getting it across. And actually, I think it's a great theory. If Abe had had more talent, and that's what we're talking about, Abe was a tremendous football coach. He's still a tremendous football coach. He's down in, you know, in Tampa. He's done a great deal to make Tampa the greatest defense, the best defense in football. And Abe's a guy that's the defensive coordinator down there, and he's actually the assistant to the head coach. But Abe was a tremendous football coach. I learned a lot of football from him, and I personally think that he had more opportunity here with the Bears. Had they decided to make those changes I think they've made now with Jim Finks, they would have been a great team.
Yeah, we were talking about the Hemophilia Foundation of Illinois and the fact that I just reminded that Abe Gibron was their third honoree. And as you know, they're a really great organization, and I'm happy that you're going to be able to be there.
Well,
you're in town.
Well, I'm not positive I'll be in town. I'm not going to say that over the air because it looks like I'll be in town. And if I am, of course, I'll be there. I've been there several years, and I always go. They've had a lot of great honorees, of course. Doug Buffone with the Bears, Abe Gibron with the Bears, and, of course, now Dick Butkus, plus several of the other great athletes in this area. So it's always a pleasure, and it's a great evening for anybody out there. If you want to really enjoy an evening for your money, you can't go wrong there.
That's right, and see a lot of famous football players too.
Well, there'll be a tremendous number of athletes. They usually have 40 or 50 of the top athletes in this area that live in this area anyway, which, of course, Chicago has a number of.
Which system do you prefer, by the way, or did you prefer if you were active today or if you were coming back into pro football? Do you like to call the plays or do you like to have the coach send them in?
Well, obviously any quarterback, especially one of my style, would want to call his own game. Although I've never been that disappointed when the coach wanted to call a game. It takes a certain amount of pressure, and during a season – you don't think about it, but it's great to have pressure taken off of you. But at the same time, I don't think you develop quite as much as a quarterback if you're not calling your own game. And I think in crucial situations, it's a tremendous advantage to have a guy that can call his own game or can come up with the right play at the right time. Coaches sometimes, if they've done it for years, it's really an experience thing. It's like playing any other sport. Experience is a great teacher. And, if you're calling your own game for several years and you get to the point where you can do the job yourself, there's definitely an advantage to it. Although I believe that Landry's style works because he has called plays for that long a period of time, I think it's also an advantage to them. You're going to have the rough years if you let a young quarterback call his own game until he matures and knows what he's doing. You're going to have some down years. Well, Tom Landry, of course, never wanted to be in that situation. He doesn't want to have the inconsistency for two or three years while he waits for a quarterback. So he's probably going to continue to do a big part of the play calling.
You know, I had Otto Graham as a guest one day, and he was telling me that even late in his career, that Paul Brown was sending in the plays.
I don't think Otto Graham ever called a play in his 10-year career, 11, whatever, how many years he played. At least that's what Abe Gibbon used to tell us. At least used to tell me when I got mad at him because he was calling a game. In fact, Abe was one of the guards in his early part of his career that ran the plays in and out. He says that's how he learned football, because he had to memorize the plays and all that. But there's no doubt that it's a tremendous advantage for a quarterback, if he's an experienced quarterback, to be able to call his own. I say tremendous advantage, just an advantage. A lot of coaches want to call the game today. They feel like they're spending the time during the week. They work very hard during the week, the coaching staff and so on and so forth. And there's no doubt that they have the knowledge to call a better game, I think, than any young quarterback would. But an experienced quarterback, because I think there is a lot of instinct in calling football and just playing football. Dick Butkus, who studied the game probably as hard as any linebacker I've ever seen. I mean, he really was a knowledgeable football player and looked at we had a computer sheet all the time on the team and everything else. But Dick Butkus's greatest attributes were the fact that he had tremendous instincts.
Yeah.
He just knew what a quarterback was thinking and what he was going to do. Dick was always half a step ahead of everybody. It was instinct, though. I don't think it was what you'd call tremendous knowledge. You know, there's still a lot of instinct in any sport. And I think football's is the same type of thing.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him here at Northwest Federal, is an old friend, Bobby Douglas, former great quarterback in the National Professional Football League. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today at Northwest Federal, and we're delighted to have him, is Bobby Douglas, an old friend and a fellow we've admired as a person and as a football player for years. Now he's in the real estate business and the food business, right, both?
Well, I'm doing a lot of real estate development. I have for the last two or three years. I knew that I'd be getting out of, or I actually knew I would be forced out of football sooner or later. Your career has to end sometime, and I was lucky enough to get in the restaurant business 6 or 7 years ago, and because of the fact that we have to acquire restaurants and there's some real estate involved, I got into that part of it, plus the promotion part of it. And in the last couple years, I was able to get into the real estate business and enjoy it a lot. It's something that I don't have to sit in an office all day. It's a creative type of a business. I like anything that's creative, and it's a real time-consuming type thing, but I'm somebody who has to keep on the move a lot. So I've enjoyed it. I've been very happy about what I've been able to do the past couple years in it. And right now, that's what I'm spending really 90% of my time on, is the real estate development business. Of course, we have 8 restaurants in the area, for anybody that wants to know, but Let Us Entertain You restaurants. And
some mighty good ones, too.
They're all good restaurants, and I do a lot of work with that.
What is the advantage, getting back to the business of playing quarterback, with a quarterback who can move and run like you can, or somebody who stays right in the pocket and operates from there?
Well, I like what you said, that I can instead of what I did, but... Yeah, I feel like I really can, and wish I was still playing. I think there's a tremendous advantage, as anybody will tell you from a defensive standpoint, All the defensive coaches will tell you that they hate to defense a guy, a quarterback that can move. The big reason is because today, and they're starting to throw the ball, I think, a little more now than they have for the last 4 or 5 years, the defensive team can put a great deal of pressure on a quarterback that can't move around because they can rush all four people. They don't have to worry about a quarterback coming out of the pocket. They tell those four, that front four, to go 100%. If they've got to worry about a guy that can move around, it's a lot tougher for the defensive end or defensive tackles to rush the quarterback. That's the one thing. I think the other thing, which I think you see in all the playoffs, you see it in all the big games, you see it with Bradshaw, you see it with any of the quarterbacks that can move around. You see them making two or three big plays a game because they can scramble out of the pocket, can get out of trouble, and it's a tremendous advantage. It's also a tremendous disadvantage to those type of quarterbacks in their early years because you become somewhat undisciplined as a passer if you start relying on the fact that you can move around. Of course, it's the thing they always said about me. But I think over the long haul, if you play football for any length of time, you know, myself, I played 10 years. Any quarterback that plays more than 4 or 5 years and is starting, he gets to the point where he disciplines himself as far as the throwing game is concerned. He knows when he should throw the ball, stay in the pocket and throw the ball, and he knows when it's time to scramble. And if he can scramble, it just adds another dimension, adds more pressure to the defense, and puts more pressure on the defense, I should say. And it's an advantage.
You've heard the expression, because I know you were interested in baseball, too, and got into it for a while. Baseball, they say that pitching is 75 or 80% of the game. In the business of pro football, as a quarterback, how should the offensive percentage be divided as to passing and running?
Well, I think it really completely depends in football on the personnel you have. I think you have to build your football team around the personnel you have. If you've got a Walter Payton, you better run him 20 to 30 times a game. They do here. If Armstrong's here yet, they do run him that much, and they should. They got to. You've got to throw the ball a little bit less if you've got a Walter Payton in your backfield. Obviously, if you're doing that and you're doing that successfully, the first thing you have to do offensively is you have to be able to run the football. You're not going to be able to throw the football. One out of 20 teams in the history, good teams in the history of football, have been able to pass first and run second. 90% of the good teams, the successful teams in football, run first, pass second. So it depends on how you're going to establish your running game. For the most part, it works out to be about a 60-40 split. But really, that depends on the football team. If you've got a Walter Payton, it might be a little higher than that. If you've got just two real good running backs, it might, like a Zonka and a Kick back when they were running the ball 70% of the time. Neither of them are what you would call Walter Payton, Gale Sayers-type running backs. But, of course, a Zonka is the type of guy you give the ball to 20 times a game, he's going to have his 100 yards. Kick was a pass-receiving type guy, and they were still. Of course, they had Mercury Morris at the time, and they were still running the ball 70% of the time. So it really depends on the style after that point. But the thing you have to do in professional football, I believe, is establish a running game first.
What do you feel as you look back on your own football career were one or two of the highlights of your career?
One or two. I don't know if I can find one or two, but I would say that, I don't know, the best situation we had for myself was when we won four games in a row. We beat Washington, Dallas, Los Angeles, and Detroit 4 weeks in a row. Ended up, we were 6-2 going into the last part of the season, which we should have won the division, I think, that year. I had four real good games, and it was a tremendous upswing in my career. And you know, I think if we had had the depth at that time, we could have gone a lot further, but we didn't. There were a lot of individual games where I felt like I had some great games. I had several games with four or five touchdown passes, at least two or three, and I had four touchdowns in Green Bay one day. We upset Green Bay up there, but you know, there are individual times, not enough of them though.
our guest at Northwest Federal today, and we're delighted to have him as an old friend, former football great Bobby Douglas. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today is a former football great, Bobby Douglas, great quarterback. Also, as an all-around athlete, you played some baseball, didn't you, Bobby?
Well, yeah, Bob, I tried to play a little bit of baseball. Last year, I played AAA baseball with the White Sox for about 2.5 months. It was a lot of fun. I had a great, it was probably at my age anyway, one of the most tremendous experiences you could go through, because it was kind of like starting all over in sports. And at that time, it was very, very enjoyable. I wish I could have stayed with it. I've got 4 kids and a family, and it's a little tough right now to, as much as I love athletics, to start all over in a new career. And, from a financial standpoint, strictly that, it's an impossible thing for me to do. I would love to play in the minor leagues for 2 or 3 more years and get a shot at the major leagues, but it would have been a real tough thing to do.
Well, you made a great reputation in football, and we're delighted to have you as a guest here today and wish you all the best, Bobby, and thanks for taking the trouble to be with us.
Bob, it's always a tremendous opportunity to be able to come and talk with you. Truly one of the greatest interviewers, and, of course, anybody that's been in the Hall of Fame and been inducted, it's a pleasure for me to be with you.
Thank you, Bobby. Our guest today, an old friend and a great football player, Bobby Douglas. Remember the Preakness this afternoon. I believe they go off at 4:25. And a lot of people are pulling for Genuine Risk, who certainly has a great chance, but I think the California horse, Codex, is going to win it. Anyway, have a nice day, and now this is Bob Ilson saying goodbye until next Saturday at our usual time.